Coming up here on KNKX is a story from our weekly show Sound Effect. Every week, there's a theme. This next story is about the last straw. Sound Effect host Gabriel Spitzer can tell you more.
This next story is about a woman at the end of a rope and a group of people whose time has run out. Homeless encampments are a regular sight when you drive along I-5. And for Linda Lowe, they've been part of her everyday life. She's a retired Tacoma firefighter who now lives in Seattle's Wallingford neighborhood, pretty close to I-5. And over the past year, two homeless encampments have sprung up right behind Linda's backyard, just past her bushes. But the world looks very different from either side of Linda's hedge. Sound Effect's Jennifer Wing talked with the homeowner and with the residents of an illegal encampment as the city was evicting them. First, let's meet Linda.
Linda Lowe is the person who you want to show up if you get hurt or find yourself in a dangerous situation. She would know exactly what to do. She's a retired Tacoma firefighter and paramedic. She's soothed the mentally ill, and she's steadied chronic alcoholics who were going through withdrawal. She made a conscious effort to get to know all of the people in her care.
I would take people to the hospital in the back of the medic unit and actually talk to them and try to get their stories, because everybody arrives where they are, if they're homeless, for a reason. You have a story for what you are in society, you know, so do I. So everybody does. And some of these people were just great people, you know, and things had happened that were unfortunate in their background. So that's why they were where they were.
After Linda retired, she moved into a small house in Seattle's Wallingford neighborhood that used to belong to her late uncle. Linda was surprised to find people similar to those she had helped on the job, setting up camp behind her home.
There's a level of anxiety having a homeless camp on the other side of my hedge. It gets higher as the garbage grows.
The first camp started out with a few tents, and then it grew. Linda says it was clean and tidy for a while, but then clothes, wet sleeping bags, old food, it all started to pile up. And from certain rooms in her house, she can see a lot.
I stood and watched a guy out there cooking a drug and then injecting it. And then one day, he apparently had just gotten up. It was probably 8:30, 9 in the morning, and was urinating.
Along with the drugs, the needles, the human waste, and the trash building up against her back hedge, there were fires. Loud shouts and screams would sometimes wake Linda up at 3 in the morning. She made multiple calls to the city. When the situation reached a critical health and safety problem, the camp was removed. Then, a few months later, new people moved in.
The first man decided to put a tent out there. So I did go out and I told him he couldn't camp there. And he said he could if he wanted to, and that was it.
Again, when the conditions reached a crisis, the camp was cleared out. The empathy and compassion that Linda once had for the homeless is being replaced by frustration.
I've actually kind of given up.
The city of Seattle estimates it has more than 400 illegal encampments. These are not single tents. They're clusters of people living outside in all sorts of scenarios, on sidewalks, grassy triangles of land that break up busy intersections, and along bike paths like the Burke Gilman. So we're talking almost 2,000 people. And yes, there's an ongoing debate of whether to just flat out leave these encampments alone or to remove them. We're not wading into those waters right now. The fact is, the city is removing sites like the ones that have popped up behind Linda's house, the camps that pose the most danger, the camps that are a threat to public health. A navigation team made up of police officers, social workers, and sanitation crews carries out the cleanups. The team also does a lot of outreach, visiting illegal sites across the city, trying to connect the homeless with social services. One of the team's leaders is Seattle Police Sergeant Eric Zur.
I always kind of think back that there's kind of two sides. There's the mercy and the justice, and the city's really trying to figure out how to balance those two things.
The extreme end of mercy would be to leave the tents alone, let people camp where they want. And justice?
You could arrest a lot of people for the things that they do, and you say, hey, you're trespassing, you can't do it, and if you don't move, boom, we just put you in jail.
On the day I meet Sergeant Zur, about a dozen tents are being taken down under the viaduct just across the street from the ferry terminal. All around us, clothes, radios, blankets, shoes, people's lives, it's all spilling out onto the sidewalk. Human feces is ground into the cement. Gatorade bottles are filled with urine. And then I spot a small bit of beauty, a healthy potted plant someone has taken care of in the midst of all this chaos. A removal, a sweep, a clear out, whatever you want to call it, it can't happen unless there is housing or shelter space the city can offer people. Members of the navigation team approach tents bearing fresh bananas and orange juice to help coax people outside so a plan can be worked out on where they can go. Bill and his partner, who didn't want to talk, are packing up.
This is our fourth time, so in 2 years. Kind of sucks. It seems like the city just doesn't care. I'm a journeyman painter. I work seasonal. And I can't afford an apartment all year round, so if we had some affordable housing, we wouldn't be doing this.
A woman makes her way over to talk to us. Her cheekbones are purple with bruises. She goes by the name Sassy. She says one of the reasons why she and others have set up tents here is because it's close to places where they can get help. The Union Gospel Mission and Peter's Place, two social service organizations, are walking distance from here.
That's the only place these people get resources. And when you move us from place to place to place to place, we're having to redo our resources all over again. And it's just a monotonous merry-go-round. The only way to ever end this is if they quit moving us, give us a stable camp where people can stay situated that's working on their housing. It's the only way to fix it, because otherwise you're just going to keep on throwing away a bunch of money to a bunch of homeless people that needed that stuff, and then they're going to go to another place to go get that stuff all over again. It just don't make sense.
Seattle is spending $65 million on homelessness this year. The city doesn't have a rundown of how much a removal like this one costs. Removal costs for last year are still being calculated and are expected to be released in a few weeks. The difficulty of people living in this situation and what they're having to do right now is not lost on Sergeant Sir.
It's hard to move, and it's hard to organize your stuff and to kind of go through this.
A man who goes by the name Moses watches his tent being crunched in the back of a trash truck. He walked away from most of his belongings. He also said no to shelter. But before heading out on his bicycle that's wrapped with Christmas lights to find a new campsite, he comes up behind Sergeant Sir.
He doesn't come down here with a chip on his shoulder or a grudge. He actually, he's humanity in his heart. He's one of the few left out there.
If you didn't catch that, Moses said Sergeant Sir has humanity in his heart. Yes, Sergeant Sir is in charge of clearing out this site, but the people who have to go don't seem to hold it against him. And the folks who turn down shelter this time, like Moses, maybe they'll say yes next time they cross paths with the familiar faces of the team. Since the navigation team has been doing this work, it's made direct contact with about 1,800 people, including the folks who set up tents behind Linda Lowe's house in Wallingford. I take a walk with Linda behind her home. She's considering putting up a very tall fence so that she doesn't have to rely on her laurel hedge to provide privacy. Afternoon rush hour is underway on I-5. Even though the earth behind her house was scraped bare by a backhoe during the last cleanup, there are still needles on the ground.
Yep, there's one without a tip on it. Yeah. I don't know what that is.
Oh, that's a dime bag of something.
Is it?
I'm just guessing, but maybe meth or something.
Oh, God, probably. Yeah, who knows?
Back inside, after spotting the small bag of drugs and those needles, Linda says she knows that many people who are homeless are battling with an addiction. Her own nephew fought hard to overcome an opioid addiction. He struggled, like the man Linda saw shooting up behind her house. While her well of patience is at rock bottom, Linda still has the urge to reach out.
You know, on Christmas, I actually considered making maybe some hot chocolate or something and taking it back there. I considered it.
But then she thought, no, doing something like that would only encourage them to stay.
That story from Sound Effects' Jennifer Wing. So far, no new tents have appeared behind Linda's house, but that is not the case for the site under the viaduct. Once that area was cleared, new tents reappeared there in just a matter of days.